brought something special with me from home. For those of you who don't know, my home is in Wandon East. But have any of you really stopped to think what a home is? Is a home the place you live in? Is a home the people you live with? Because I've lived in many places, and I've lived with many people. Which of them is my home? A couple of years ago, we travelled for 20,000 kilometres around Australia as a family. Tell you what, I think that felt more like home than Wandon East. We were in a 2 metre by 6 metre canvas roofed trailer. Our address changed twice a week. We got so good at changing address that when we arrived at a new place, we could set up our home in 20 minutes. The chaos would be turned into order and we could sit down and rest. I think that's what home is. Home's a place where the chaos is turned into order. Home's a place that when the chaos has been brought into order, we can sit down and rest. So what I brought here represents home for our family and for me. It's been with me as we've travelled over thousands of kilometres. I've packed it and unpacked it many times. I know all the places that it fits in our car and in our camper, and there isn't many. See, packing is an art. Don't you love packing? Well, this package has challenged my artistry. But this is something special. Most of you have probably guessed what it is already. It looks just like a camp chair. But in our house, this chair is special because it represents something. This is Mum's chair. Do you have your own chair in your house? When you sit at the table, do you have a place that's yours or a chair that's yours? Most of us have a chair or a place that feels comfortable, where we feel secure. And we know this because when we go to visit someone else, what do? We say, which chair's yours? Yeah. Now, mums are very busy people. I've noticed that. Mums have lots of jobs to do. Mum doesn't get her jobs done by sitting in the chair. Mum has to get up and work until the chaos has been turned into order. And then she can sit down and rest. The chair represents the rest that follows the completion of the work. What's that rest like? It's peace and it's harmony. This is what makes sitting in Mum's chair special. Of course, if your family is anything like mine, peace and harmony are a finite commodity. Soon, chaos tends to creep back into the atmosphere, and Mum has to get out of her chair and go and restore order to the chaos. And then she can return to her rest. As children, we go looking for peace and harmony in our parents' chair. When chaos closes around us like darkness, did you go to your mother's chair? When troubles filled you with terror, did you long for a father's embrace? When you felt small and alone, there was security to be found in your mother's lap. When you were filled with tears, we went looking for a father's chair. I recently had this modelled to me by a young child. I was visiting a friend of mine and we were talking late. It may come as a surprise to some of you that I can talk for a long time. You might find out this morning. As it got late, his six-year-old son woke from a dream, came creeping down the hall, bleary-eyed, looking for security. And he came, not to his father, but to me, climbed into my lap, curled up, and went back to sleep. It was beautiful. It was lovely. All of us, at least once in our life, and usually many more times, feel like that little child, alone and vulnerable, longing for the security of being wrapped up in the arms of a strong protector who could calm our fears and comfort our terror. I hope that there was someone in your father's chair. But I'm sure for all of us, we can remember a time when we went to our father's chair and no one was there. Instead, the chair was empty. It's filled with gloom, lonely, surrounded by fear. I wonder, has much really changed? Do you still long for your father's metaphorical chair? Like me, are you searching for the comfort of a father's embrace? Like me, do you feel alone? Do you feel vulnerable? Sometimes, are you just managing to hold back the tears? How long to climb into my father's chair, to climb into his lap, to curl up in his loving arms, to feel the strength and security that I need wrap around me. My father's no longer with me. He's at rest. He's seated beside the King of the universe. The father's chair I'm dreaming of is God's throne. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could just walk into the room where the maker of the universe is seated, resting? His work completed, and climb into his lap and find comfort and peace from all our fears and insecurities. Well, this is my hope. I hope it can be yours as well. But where is this King of the universe's home? Where is the chair that he's resting in? And how will we be able to recognize it? We've been learning about the King of the universe in Isaiah. What's the King like? We know that our God is a holy King. We learn that our God is a just King. We learn that our God is a faithful King, that our God is a warrior King, that our God is a comforting King. But if he's a king, his home must be a palace. And if he's a king, what kind of chair has he got? Well, it's a throne. And if this king was resting in his throne, the evidence of it would be peace and harmony across the whole universe. Well, let's see if we can find where this king's home is. In Genesis 1, we can read the story about how God built his home. We won't turn there, but God built his home, the heavens, the earth, and the sea. All this is God's palace, his tabernacle, the place in which he dwells. Having brought order to the chaos, to the chaos in the heavens, to the chaos on earth, to the chaos of the sea, God rested. When he rested, that means he sat down on his throne. That's what we do when we rest. We sit down on our chair. His work completed, the chaos brought into order. His throne was a specific place in the palace. In Genesis 2, it's got the Garden of Eden. How do we know that this is God's throne? Because when God sat down, peace and harmony was found in the heavens and on earth and in the sea. This is great news for us, because if we want to go and find God's home, God's palace, we don't have to go anywhere. We're in it already. The whole earth is God's home. Not only that, when we go to God's throne, in the Bible, it always pictures God as doing something, sitting on his throne. You see, God is still seated. God is still resting. His work to bring order to the chaos has not been undone. If it had been undone, like Mum, he would have to get out of the chair and go and fix it. But God's still in his chair. God's still sitting on his throne. The order has not been undone. In our chaos, isn't it wonderful to know that God is seated on his throne? His work is complete. Isn't that a wonderful hope? However, this is not what our daily lives usually look like, is it? They're often filled with chaos. Our lives are a lot like Adam. See, Adam looked at the forbidden fruit and he judged with his own eyes that it was good. And he decided with his own ears what was best. And as a result, he was removed from the peace and harmony of Eden. Doesn't Eden seem like a distant dream? An echo from far down history that we can't touch, that we can't reach? It whispers to us of a hope that might one day unfold. But for now, it's beyond our grasp. This is the world that Isaiah was in when he wrote in Isaiah chapter 11. Let's see what he wrote. Isaiah chapter 11, verse 1. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. Now, what is this telling us? The stump of Jesse. Jesse is the father of David. David is the king. The king, the root that is coming, the hope that Isaiah is looking for, is for a king. What will it look like? Verse 2. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. The Spirit of wisdom and of understanding. The Spirit of counsel and of power. The Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his own eyes. He will not decide by what he hears with his own ears. But with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give his decision for the poor. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. The breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt, and faithfulness the sash around his waist. See, Isaiah lived in a land where the kings were like Adam. They were kings who would judge not with godly wisdom. They were kings who didn't bring order. They were kings who brought chaos. They judged with their own eyes. They decided with their own ear, rather than with godly wisdom, and resulted in chaos. I wonder, is it much different now? Do our rulers judge with their own eyes? Do they decide with their own ears? And what is the result? Do we have order or do we have chaos? And yes, in my own life, is it much different? Do I judge with my own eyes? My life is often filled with chaos because I've chosen to go my own way. But Isaiah hopes for a king who will be different, a king who will judge with godly wisdom, who will bring order to the chaos, a king who will pass Adam's test, a king who will not try and complete God's work by the schemes dreamed up by his own eyes and his own ears. Instead of attempting to earn his way into God's throne room by merit, this king will rest in the confidence of the Spirit of the Lord that has already completed the work. And what will this look like? Verse 6. The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat, the calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. A cow will feed the bear. The young will lie down together. We'll feed with the bear. And the lion will eat the straw like an ox. Hopefully the cow doesn't feed the bear. But what does this place look like? We've been there already. Where was it? The Garden of Eden. This is what Isaiah says it will look like. Verse 8, the infant will play near the hole of the cobra, and the young put his hand into the viper's nest. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain, and the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. The evidence that this king is come will be peace and harmony in heaven and on earth and in the sea. Well, we live much later than Isaiah, and we read back into Isaiah and put Jesus into the place of this king. But let's just check for a moment. Is this what the gospel writers thought? Or is it our own interpretation? If you want to turn to Mark chapter 1, verse 12 to 13. In Mark chapter 1, Jesus has just been baptized by John the Baptist and has come out, and the Spirit of the Lord has descended, rested upon him in the form of a dove. And this is what happens. At once, the Spirit sent him out into the desert. And he was in the desert for 40 days. And he was tempted by Satan. And he was with the wild animals. And angels attended or ministered or served him. See, like Isaiah's hope for king, Jesus is anointed by the Holy Spirit. It rests upon him. He's anointed as God's son. Now, God is the king of the universe. So his son is going to be of the same type. That means Jesus, the son of God, is going to be a king. The first thing Isaiah was looking for. Jesus was tempted like Adam, but he did not judge with his own eyes or decide with his own ears. No, instead he trusted in God's wisdom. That's what we were looking for in Isaiah. The evidence of this is interesting. Mark says Jesus dwelt with the wild animals Funny line to put in there, isn't it? There was peace on earth. Not only does the earth acknowledge God's the rule of Jesus, the angels of heaven come down to serve him as well. It's almost like Mark has put this really short description together to present Jesus as the promised king that Isaiah was hoping for. One short sentence. Mark likes to do things quickly. Advent is a time of expectant waiting. This week, the Advent theme is hope. What does it mean to be expectantly waiting with hope? The Israeli Bible Weekly describes hope like this. Hope is associated with God. So the term expresses confidence, not in a future outcome, but in a present divine strength. We usually use the term hope to mean a future outcome which has not yet been determined. But biblical hope is confidence that the current reality of a divine strength will be revealed as a physical certainty. Let me say that again. It's important and it's big words. Biblical hope is a confidence that the current reality of a divine strength will be revealed as a physical certainty. When Isaiah hoped for a coming king who would bring harmony and peace, he did not see this as a possible future outcome. He saw this as a certainty based on his confidence in the reality of a God whose divine strength he had seen. In Isaiah chapter 6, we did this a few weeks ago. Isaiah saw the throne of God. And where was God? Seated on his throne, resting in his completed work of bringing order to the chaos. This is the hope of Isaiah. Likewise, Jesus put his hope in the same thing. He did not judge by his own eye. He did not decide by his own ear. He put his confidence in the reality of God's divine strength. So, this Advent, are you hoping for the coming of Jesus as a yet-to-be-determined view of your future outcomes? Or are you hoping with a confidence in a divine strength of a current spiritual reality for which you are expecting to see the physical completion? On the back of your handout says a part of a poem written by a man called David Meese. It says this: sometimes at night I dream of a throne and my loving God calling me home. And as I appear, he rises and smiles, reaches with love to welcome his child, holding him close, never to cry, never to fear, in his arms, safe and secure. My father's chair sits in a royal room. My father's chair holds glory beyond the tomb. My father's chair, my God is there, and I am his eternal heir. Do you look forward to one day sharing in that father's chair? Do you dream of God's throne? Is it a possible future outcome for you? Or can you be confident in it as a present divine strength? The writer of Hebrews answers this question for us. I'm going to jump over to Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14. Makes the answer clear. Therefore, Says the writer of Hebrews, since we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Remember, that is like saying Jesus, who is of the same type as God, Jesus the King. Let us hold firmly to the faith which we profess, the faith which is our hope. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses. We have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet without sin. Jesus was tempted, but he did not judge with his own eyes. He did not decide with his own ears. This is the person that Isaiah was hoping for. And this is what the writer of Hebrews tells us. Let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. This is not a possible future outcome yet to be determined. This is a present divine strength. We are invited into the throne room of God. This is my hope. Not based on the merit of my own work, but on Jesus, who rested in the completed work of God. Not on the judgment of my own eyes or my own ears, but on the merit of Jesus, who trusted in God's wisdom. It is not a possible future outcome, but confidence in a present divine strength, because Jesus the King has gone before me and he has opened the door, and now the throne room of the King of the universe is open for me, for you. As Hebrews said, for all who are in need. Are you in need of your divine Father's chair this morning? Do you want to climb into his arms, the arms of a loving God? Do you need rest from the chaos of life? Do you dream of standing before the divine throne where you can be safe, where you can be secure, where tears are no more, where fears have been destroyed? Is this your hope? Is it your hope like a possible future outcome not yet determined? Or is it your hope? Is it your confidence in a spiritual reality that you are waiting to see the physical completion? If you feel like that little child hoping for their father's chair, it can be a present divine strength for you today. It is not something you can reach by merit. It cannot be found by the wisdom of your own eyes and your own ears. It can only be reached because of the merit of Jesus, who rested in the confidence of God's completed work of bringing order to chaos. If we trust in Jesus, whose coming we remember through this Advent period, it can be your hope, a confidence in a present divine strength. This is my hope, the hope I long to share with you, the hope that I hope you can share with others this Advent season. This is a season where chaos often rules, where we often neglect to remember the King who brings rest, the King who brings order. Instead of celebrating the coming of a King who brings rest, who brings order, We chase after our own schemes. These lead to fear. They lead to insecurity. They lead to vulnerability. They lead to tears. The throne room of heaven is open. We can lay down our cares at the throne of grace, and we can find mercy in our time of need.